Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the teen, your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. I'm here with the Lou and your T-Lo, Lorenzo, Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
How are we all doing today? How are you, Lorenzo?
Fine. I'm going crazy. I need some sun. Yeah, I need my gym.
He really...
Oh, yeah.
He's really gone around the bend this week, folks.
But actually, I feel like this is a week where a lot of people did. It has been... We've just been getting yelled at on social media all week long.
I know.
I mean, I think the question about drive-ins, and then earlier the week, I mentioned something about going to a restaurant and complete meltdowns.
Yeah, I'm trying to just let it go because people are very tense right now, so yeah.
Oh, yes, very, very tense. We are going to talk a bit this week about the current situation and how pop culture is responding to it and or not responding to it. We're going to look at the plans to go ahead with the Emmys in September and what that actually might look like. Venice Film Festival has announced that they are going ahead with their plans for September, including quote-unquote socially distanced red carpets. AMC Theaters this week ran into a big problem when they originally announced that they were going to open but not make people wear masks. Then there was a huge backlash. And in the ensuing discussion, it all came down to why are we, whatever. We're going to get to all
of
that.
We'll get to that, yes.
But it is also the end of Pride Month. And for us, this was a special Pride because we are facing it as two authors of an LGBTQ history book for the first time. Legendary Children came out in March, and there was every plan in the world to utilize this month as sort of the final leg of our first promotional, push for the book. But because of COVID, our book tour got shut down. And then earlier this month, the whole conversation turned towards Black Lives Matter, and it was just a different tenor of conversation. It wasn't a time for self-promotion. June just hasn't been a month for self-promotion. And listen, I say this with this is not a complaint. This is what the conversations happening in the country right now have to happen, and if things need to be put on the back burner or put aside completely while those conversations happen, I am fully supportive of that, even if it affects my life or my career. Having said that, we're taking this final week of the month, this final podcast, to talk a little bit about Pride, a little bit how it intersected with our book this year. And specifically, I want Lorenzo to talk about... I do so much of the talking about our book because the words are mine, even though the concept was ours and Lorenzo helped me all through the process of writing the book. But for the past month, he's been doing this project on our Twitter that is 100% his. And it's centered around queer history, and it's really taken off. And I'm so proud of him because he's turned it into something beautiful. Lorenzo, tell the people about it.
Well, it's Pride Month, as Tom said. And, it's been a very low-key Pride Month. And I just wanted to do a little something different. Contribute a little bit. So I decided to post vintage photographs of gay couples. I'd say gay because back then that was the term. So just post them, as far as I could go back and find them. And so I've been doing it, and it's getting a great response. People are very happy to see those pictures. And at first, I wasn't sure what kind of pictures I was going to post. I looked for, and I found so many pictures. And I didn't want to do pictures that were during the protest or the parade or something like that. I wanted a different tone. I wanted pictures that reflected happiness and
queer love.
Queer love and happy. By that, what I mean by that is that, yes, it is very important to have those pictures of people protesting and marching and the parade and all that. But I wanted to show pictures of couples happy or friends together with couples happy, having a happy moment despite all they went through or they were going through at the time. So it was very hard to find those pictures. It was quite the challenge for me because... Well, several things. First of all, some of you might know that late 19th century, a lot of pictures were taken of men together holding hands or hugging or posing in a way that it looked like they were a couple, a gay couple, but they weren't. So it was very hard for me to find pictures from the late 19th century that were actually gay couples. So that was a challenge. I did a lot of research. I would find pictures and I would try to find more information about them. And then the same thing, you know, around the World War II, same thing. You know, you have all these soldiers holding hands or goofing around and
kissing even
and doing things like that. So it was hard to make sure that I got the right pictures. But it was beautiful. The whole process was very interesting. We're still doing it. But the whole process to me...
He posts about 4 or 5 every day?
Yeah.
Through the whole month of June?
Well, sometimes 6 or 7, depending on how many I have. But I've been posting every day, and I'll be posting until the last day of the month. But it was quite an experience because you can... Just looking at the pictures and going through the whole process, you know, and... Interesting to see how you go from studio pictures because, you know, people didn't have a camera late 19th century, for example, unless you were super rich. But you go to a studio and take, you have your picture taken. It's very interesting to see the change in the way they pose. They, you know, when you move to 1920s, people were, I guess,
freer, more animated.
Yes, more animated, freer to express their sexuality. So you can see that in the pictures. And then it gets tough again in the 30s and 40s and 50s. But people still manage to take pictures because that's when the portable camera was introduced. And people had their own camera to take their pictures. So they felt safer to take their pictures. And it's interesting because we've been posting pictures of all, you know, from different times. And when you get to the 40s and 50s, you see pictures of, because back then, gay friends would get together to have their private parties because, you know, you couldn't go to a bar or whatever, a restaurant, and be animated.
In our book, we talked about the importance of house parties to queer social life and queer cultural traditions. Specifically, we talked about it in reference to the rise of lip syncing. Among drag queens and how it almost certainly originated at these house parties. You know, there have been gay bars and lesbian salons going back to the 19th century and even hangouts where gay men were known to congregate going back to like the 17th century.
Right.
But it was still a very dangerous thing to do for a lot of people and especially for gender nonconforming people. And that may include transgender people, that may include drag queens, that includes very butch lesbians and very femmy gay men. And if they went out, their very existence was challenged by the cops and their very behavior was considered illegal. So a lot of these house parties, you'll see the gender nonconforming. And you see that in these pictures of like in the 1930s, right. 1940s, and 1950s. It's these queer house parties and there's always someone who is either in drag or expressing their gender identity in a way that they can't outside. And as we've noted before with these pictures, when you look at them, especially the ones in the 20th century that are taken in people's houses and apartments, always pay attention to the background because the blinds are shut and the curtains are drawn. Because you didn't have these parties with the windows open.
No, the neighbors used to call the cops if they suspected anything. And I think I mentioned this before, that the gay men would invite their women friends, you know.
Right.
So that that they would look like they're all couples. So it was very, it's been fascinating to go through these pictures. And it's been very hard to find representation of Asian people. Throughout, you know, the decades, and
you said a mouthful there, and it is one of the. I'm sorry. Do you mind?
No. And then black people too, interracial couples. So I'm doing my very best, and I'm appreciating and enjoying the process because it's forcing me to look for these pictures. But boy, it's not easy to find these pictures.
Again, taking this back to the writing of the book, we tried to be as diverse as possible in the writing of the book and in the people that we highlighted and spotlighted. And it kills me to this day that there is no Asian representation in our book because talk about sidelined in queer culture. They were off on their own, Asian queer people in America, and were not part of any of the queer tradition, not in the mainstream, not for a long time, not well into the Stonewall era. And it's a shame because there are legendary Asian drag queens in history, but they never got their due and they never got to influence other drag queens the way the people in our book did. But it killed me. It pains me to this day that there really is no one in the book. There's no section of the book devoted to Asian American drag.
Right.
It's just not documented.
Right,
I'm sorry.
Right. No. Another fascinating thing that I found is that you can actually find a lot of vintage photos in photo booth photos.
Yes.
And I just find
because you couldn't drop those pictures off at a place to be developed.
That was the point I was getting to, that you could immediately get those pictures and take them with you and, you know, in a safe way. So you see a lot of pictures, 40s and 50s, actually, pictures of two men kissing, and because they, you know, they would take the picture with them. And that was an issue at the time, how to develop those pictures, because it was illegal to, you know, to develop those pictures or to be in those situations.
Right.
So it's fascinating. The whole history of developing this picture at the time is fascinating, because they would actually... Some of the gay publication at the time, magazines and like Physique Pictorial and all these magazines, they would actually offer developing like photo development service, so people could develop their pictures
and not get arrested.
They would even offer a credit card service, so that those charges wouldn't show on your regular card.
Right.
So you'd have a separate card. Those things are fascinating because they all go together. And we
touched again on this in the book about how photography, the development of photography, helped develop queer identity in a lot of ways. There is that. There is that aspect of being able to take pictures of your queer self, say at parties or say in a romantic situation or even erotica. Photography helped initiate that. And it helped basically usher in what we call porn now.
Right.
The physique pictorial industry, the erotic postcard industry of the late 19th century, all of that helped form modern queer identity as we know it. So you're right. It's one of the things I loved about researching the book and writing the book was how much fun it was to pull in all these things, like the rise of advertising or the rise of photography, and show how it made us who we are. It made queer people who we are.
Right.
I just want to say, you said it was a collection of gay couples, but there's trans couples all over it. It's not gay.
No. I mean, because it was easier to find gay people, especially gay men, obviously.
Right.
But I made sure to look for all kinds of representation, the best I could. You have to understand, I'm dealing with vintage photos here. And first of all, I had to sort of make sure, I mean, sometimes I'm not 100% sure, but sort of sure that they were a couple and that I could find all kinds of representation. So there are a couple of transgender people as well. And I'm, you know, doing the best I can, but I'm really enjoying it. People are replying and saying that, you know, it's putting a smile on their face,
right,
looking at those pictures. So I'm happy with it.
You know what else is putting a smile on my face, Lorenzo? We'll get back to talking about this stuff in a second. But this portion of the podcast is being sponsored by Orate, and we want to give out a shout out to them. Orate is fine jewelry made in New York City, founded by women for women. Pieces range from classic to statement to completely original. Orate makes the jewelry you always wanted but could never find. Because it's all real gold, you can wear it and never have to take it off. Shower, sport, sleep, cook, anything. It's jewelry for life. All Orate pieces come with a lifetime warranty because they know it lasts. And because Orate sells direct to you without the middleman markup, they can offer the same quality as traditional Fifth Avenue brands at a fraction of the cost. Orate hacked the jewelry market, making real gold accessible. Orate is ethically made in New York City, empowering women with the best jewelry options without sacrificing style. For every piece sold, a child in need receives a book to further their education. Orate was started by two friends during brunch when one got a green finger from an overpriced ring, sparking a conversation about how they were fed up with the traditional jewelry market. Orate is looking to set the standard for women because they deserve the best. Orate's solid gold is strong enough to endure the ocean, pool, or backyard sprinkler. The pearls they use are ethically sourced and born to be in the water so you can swim sustainably. So for 15% off your first Orate purchase, go to OrateNewYork.com, O-U-R-A-T-E, newyork.com/TLO and use promo code TLO to get 15% off your first Orate purchase. That's OrateNewYork.com/TLO. Use promo code TLO. And real quick, your mother loved the Orate pieces we sent her.
They are beautiful. They are very affordable and very beautiful. My mom loved Everything I got for her.
She still raves about them.
She loves everything about it. The quality, the fact that the design is very different, everything.
Yes. Orate.com/TLO. That's OrateNewYork.com/TLO. And use promo code TLO to get 15% off at purchase. Thank you, Orate. Okay, back to queer history and queer culture. Pardon me. We reviewed the Netflix documentary Disclosure this week.
Yes, yes, yes. Very good documentary. And as someone said actually on Twitter, replying to my tweet, you know, she thought she knew everything about it, that she, you know, was fine with everything already, accepted it, you know, things the way they were. Let me put it this way, kind of, you know, with no problems with transgender people, that she thought that she had learned so much about it and then watched the documentary and it blew her away.
Well, as I said, I'm like, we wrote a book partially on trans history. Mm-hmm. And even we were like, wow. Right. I mean, we were educated on this documentary.
Right. And the reason
Disclosure is a documentary about, I don't think we said, it's on Netflix. It's Netflix. It looks at the history of trans representation in the media, on television, in the movies specifically. And again, I thought I knew this stuff. I thought I had a handle on it. And I came out the other side of it completely like, oh my God, really an eye-opening documentary, even for someone who thought his eyes were pretty open on these points.
And the reason why I mentioned her is because I felt the same way. I was like, that's exactly my reaction. I was like, okay, I know most of it, but I'll watch it. Completely blown away. The footage they showed of movies representing transgender people were horrifying examples.
Yeah, and a lot of them were very recent movies.
Yes, I couldn't, and I was kind of ashamed that I was like, it never occurred to me watching these movies that they were so,
just the montage of people throwing up when they find out someone's trans in famous movie. It's like, wow, I thought I knew. And I just didn't have it all added up like that.
Right. And the same way I watched gay movies and felt represented or happy to see a gay person and all the problems I had with it, you know, throughout my life. They, in the documentary, you have these transgender ladies, right? Mm-hmm. Talking about.
And men.
And men, yes. Talking about how they reacted watching those movies. And it's something that you don't see a lot. So that's what I loved about the documentary. It's very respectful. And it's just present this, these, I'd say these, not opinions, but these testimony, right? In a way that I had never seen on a documentary before.
One of the things, again, about the book, in the writing of the book, I was re-educated on transgender history and how it intersects with LGBTQ history, and also how transgender experiences map to my own experiences as a gay man. You should always be very careful not to apply your experiences to some other groups because you risk misunderstanding what made their experiences unique to them.
Right.
But like a lot of gay people, when we went from calling ourselves the gay community to the LGBTQ community, I was like, okay, what do transgender people have to do with my life? What do they have to do with the way I live? I mean, I'm fully supportive, but are we really part of the same community? Which, I mean, I was, of course, hugely mistaken on that. I'm telling this because we just, in our last podcast, we had this discussion about doing the work to constantly question yourself and what you assume about people. And in doing so, you should publicly admit those times when you had to learn lessons. So over, I don't know, the last decade or so, I slowly came towards this point. And then in the writing of the book, it just was so laser focused. This idea that, you know, trans history is completely tied up in queer history and LGBTQ. The quote unquote gay rights movement that we used to call it, was started by trans women. Not only that, but again, taking it back to disclosure, when you listen to these trans women and men talk about their experiences growing up and just so hungry to see some version of themselves on screen that isn't a joke or isn't a horrifyingly bad portrayal, when they talk about, I'm like, yeah, that was what it was like growing up in the 70s and 80s when all portrayals of gay people were terrible. And when you have these moments, you realize, yes, we are part of the same community, because even though our existences are different, our experiences are similar. Because in a patriarchal society, anybody that challenges patriarchal gender norms, and that includes gay people as well as trans people, they are going to be largely treated the same way and have a lot of similar experiences. Just the fact that trans people and gay people come out, you know, they come to terms with the essential parts of their identity. Again, it's not a good idea to completely map your experiences onto some other groups, but because we are part of one community, we are the LGBTQ community, and because it's Pride Month and the contributions of trans people are finally getting their due in the LGBTQ community, you know, it's just important to have these conversations and to examine these things. That's all I wanted to say about that.
No, I agree. I was in tears watching the documentary because it taught me so much, and I didn't think I had anything else to learn, you know, in general.
And that's the lesson right there. Never, never assume you don't have anything else to learn. The learning never stops.
It's true. It's very true.
So anyway,
we highly recommend it.
Yes, obviously. highly recommend. It's Pride Weekend. We put up a fantastic playlist on our site for Legendary Children that will take you through 100 years of queer history. And then you can go over to Netflix and watch the Disclosure documentary, and you will be caught the hell up. You will be an expert by the time you're done. just as anybody who bought our book is now an expert, which if you haven't done, you should do it. Okay, yes. Moving on. To, I don't know if these are more frivolous matters, because what's frivolous in this day and age? The Emmys. The Emmys announced that they were going forward with their September ceremony, although no one has decided yet what that's going to be. And the interesting thing is, for a split second there, the possibility, like, oh, I even tweeted a couple. I'm like, why don't they have it outside? Have everyone, you know, sit 10 feet apart from each other and blah, blah, blah. Like, you could still do some version of the Sarah. And then, of course, the numbers in California have completely exploded.
Right, right.
This is the other thing, is that the film and television industry were getting ready to start shooting again. And there were all these guidelines that they were going to follow. And, you know, this is good news to us, because it's really hard finding content if you're a pop culture website and pop culture has shut down. But again, the numbers in California have exploded. So I don't know what's happening with that. Also this week, or last week, the Venice Film Festival announced that they were going ahead with it. They were going to do socially distanced red carpets and so on and so forth. And now, is it the European Union is shutting down anybody from America coming? So I don't even know if American stars will be allowed. It'll just all be Italian film stars. And you know what? We'll cover it.
But celebrities are probably not civilians like the president.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll get special visas or something.
Oh my God! That's the thing, you can't plan anything ahead of time.
I mean, I will say publicly, a couple of months ago, we did stuff on the shutdown and on pop culture. And I was like, oh, it'll all spring back. Maybe it'll take a while. But come on, Disney World's not going anywhere. Major League Baseball's not going anywhere. Well, I mean, I still firmly believe Disney World is not going to collapse. And I still believe we'll be going back to stadiums again. But man, I don't know what's happening this year. And like I said, as people who, this is our bread and butter, literally, we're watching all this stuff very, very closely.
Yes, because as Tom said, it's hard to come up with content every day. And I just want to also say that thank you so much for your support, for reading us, for following us, for sending emails to us, Instagram and everything. So thank you. We really appreciate
it. Yes, and if you like any of our content, including this podcast, please share it widely, because that's how we make our money, literally.
It's not a big issue here, but it is in a way for us. It's not for the world, but it is for us.
I mean, it's for any publication right now. And if that publication deals with pop culture or fashion, we're all scrambling. We're all wondering, well, what the hell are we going to cover if there's nothing to cover? So, yes, we are following this stuff very, very closely. I don't know. I was all ready to do a podcast with, well, here's how they should do the Emmys. But again, the numbers are exploding in California. Well, maybe don't do the Emmys in California then, you know? Philadelphia, yeah. We're doing really well. So if you want to have one of our stadiums to hold the Emmys, like, go ahead.
So far, we're doing okay.
Yeah, touch wood. But I don't know. And like I said at the top of the hour, AMC Theaters announced that they were opening, but then they weren't going to enforce masks. And then there was this enormous backlash, and they came out and said, okay, yes, we will enforce masks. But of course, that's a joke, because they can't even enforce people not using cell phones in movie theaters. So all this is going to do, I really don't want to sound the death knell of movie theaters or anything, but all it's going to do is cause confrontations inside the theater while people are trying to watch a movie. Like, someone's going to, you know, take their mask off, and then everyone's going to boo them or call someone to take care
it's
of
true.
It.
It's true.
And then there's going to be this fight. Who wants that? Who
I didn't
wants,
even think about
as
that.
As someone said on Twitter, I think it was someone in film Twitter, one of the critics said it, it's now going to be like, I'm in the middle of this really tense situation. Going to the movies now means I'm in the middle of this really tense, life-threatening situation, and somewhere nearby a movie is playing in the background. Like, that's basically it. So why open theaters? If this is the thing with all these reopenings, all these restaurants rush to reopen when nobody wanted to go to restaurants. Like, even the ones, I mean, first off, the ones that actually drew crowds, they wound up getting all these COVID spikes. But most of them are having trouble because most people aren't stupid. They're not going out. No one's going to risk their life for a hamburger right now. Well, some people will. And people aren't going to risk their life for a movie. And this kills me because I want to see Wonder Woman 1984 so badly. Tenet, the Christopher Nolan film, which he was stubbornly insisting was going to come, and he pushed it back another 2 weeks, and now it's coming out in August. But come on. August is 6 weeks away, less than 6 weeks away. And no,
what's going on with Wonder Woman? Are they...
They pushed it back to the fall. This is my thing. I said it on Twitter yesterday. I don't understand why, like, AMC and Cinemark and the major movie chains are... I mean, most movie theaters, there's urban movie theaters, of course, but most movie theaters are not in urban settings. They're either in suburban or rural. So they're usually in places with big parking lots, like malls and shit like that. Why?
Shit like that.
Why? Well, we don't have malls, and I hate malls. Why don't they just do these pop-up drive-in theaters in their own parking lots? Why don't they just erect big inflatable movie screens?
Right.
And just sell tickets that way. If people need to use the bathroom, you can go in the theater, and that's where you can go buy your popcorn if they just let people in, like, every 10 feet or so. And then everybody, like, I don't understand. This seems like a no-brainer to me. Why wouldn't you do this? I want to see my Wonder... I don't even have a car, and I'm like, I want you to do this so I can go see Wonder Woman. I'll rent an Uber for, like, two and a half hours.
We'll call Uber to see a movie.
Anyway, it is... Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know what kind of content we're going to have by September. It'll be really interesting. It's funny. I joked about it, but our whole celebrity red carpet coverage by the end of the year may just be all Asian and European red carpets, full of film stars that we never normally cover.
Right.
Because they're the only ones stepping out.
Well, I have to say...
pardon me.
Trying to be as creative as we can lately has taught me a lot. Like, to be more open to other things. I think we were kind of like not doing the same things, but relying on the same things. And I think with this pandemic, I've learned to be a little more creative and keep an eye out for, you know, I don't know, just be open to other things.
Agreed. It's been an interesting time, of course. We have really had to stretch our
faculties, so to speak, and
right.
and really challenge how we've been doing business. At the same time, like I said, trying to promote a book in a situation that is just working against every attempt to promote that book. It's just been an interesting year for us in a way that we didn't plan for. Well, but again, who was that not true for?
Right.
My niece had to cancel her wedding. Two of my nieces and one of my nephews had to cancel their graduation. So, and 120 million people have lost their jobs. So I think a lot of people are having kind of a goofy a year.
Oh my God, yes.
To put it mildly. Anyway, I hope we're doing whatever we can to lighten the load for you guys for a little bit of time each week. And I do appreciate everybody who's been supporting us through this whole period. Like I said, if you love anything we're doing, including this podcast, please, please, please share it widely right. on your social media. Tell people about it, because that is the only way we have ever made money at this job.
I agree.
Through eyeballs and ears.
And thank you for sharing your stories, what you're doing in the Tea Lounge post. I've been reading every single comment, and it's very nice to just, you know a little bit about you guys and what you're doing and what you're going through and, you know, everything else.
Absolutely. So, kittens, until next week, when we'll have more to talk about in terms of whatever passes in front of our eyes and in front of our desks, we thank you once again for listening to us, and we'll see you then. Love you, mean it. Bye-bye.
Bye.